you guys doing? This is another episode of Moto IQ Radio. My name is Will. Welcome to the show. Second show for 2012. Hope everybody's settling into their resolutions, goals, and challenges for the year. I'm definitely making it part of my mission this year to bring you guys some giveaways, some t-shirts, all types of craziness. So everybody stay tuned for that. Well, coming up next here, we have Kyle Mohan, and I'm not sure if he's on the line right now, but I see somebody from California. Is that you, Kyle?
Yeah, that's me. How you doing?
Hey, man. How you doing, dude?
Oh, fantastic. Happy to be on the show. Happy to be here doing this.
Well, that's cool, man. I'm actually really, really excited for this, and for reasons we'll get into a little bit later, but I guess first thing I should say, happy birthday. You had your birthday this week.
Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah, it was yesterday. Fantastic. Got to go to Catalina and do some zip lining. It was a good birthday, that's for sure.
That's awesome. And those are the things you want to hear. But let's get into you. Just had your birthday. You just turned, what, 30?
That's right.
Man, hit the big 3-0.
Tell me about it. It really snuck up on me. I didn't see it coming at all. I've been saying I've been, 25 for, I'm pretty sure, the past 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, I'm totally jealous, man. I'm about to turn 31, man, so I know how that goes.
Yeah.
Just so everybody knows, you were previously interviewed by Justin Banner. He's in the chat room. What's up, J-Ban?
Hey, what's up?
Yeah, he's in the chat room. He's checking this out. So big shout-out to him. If you go to the MotoYQ.com post for this particular show, there's a link directly to Justin's article interviewing you. So we won't go too much into details, but can you sort of give us a short and sweet of your background and sort of how you wound up driving?
Yeah. I guess it really started with my dad. He used to take me to the Long Beach Grand Prix. Grew up in Long Beach, so went there, multiple years in a row with my dad. He worked in the automotive industry, so he kind of helped me get my first real automotive job, which happened to be at Mazda Tricks. And with some previous experience from my grandfather, he was kind of into fabrication and metalwork, and did a job at Mazda Tricks. I got to start actually going to racing events with the Mazda Tricks team. And that really kind of sold me on the whole racing automotive industry. I went from, being on one side of the fence watching to actually being able to work on the cars, change the tires. And, I started up at the base. I was not even getting to change the oil. I was getting to take the oil that was already out of the car to the drain buckets. But, I was still at the track, and, I had a blast and did that for multiple years and was able to work my way up to where I was actually maintaining the Mazda Tricks race cars and even some customer cars. And once I was starting to get comfortable with that, I obviously wanted to build my own car. And Mazda Tricks wasn't instantly supportive, but I was pretty adamant about doing it regardless. And eventually, once I got some of my first cars built, they were very happy to help me promote them and work on them as time has come along.
Well, that's awesome, and I don't want you to represent Mazda Tricks in any official capacity since we're here to really talk about you, the driver. Mazdas, how did you come to Mazdas? Because I think everybody sort of has an origin story of how they were affected by the Mazda bug.
When I was in high school, it was the import drag racing stuff was going on really strong, and Gran Turismo just came out. So, a lot of friends had Hondas, and a very few select had Mazdas. And, I didn't know anything about them, but they just sounded cool and seemed unique. And as time went on, you play Gran Turismo, I was like, oh, yeah, that's a cool-looking car. And an opportunity came along to actually take a ride in a well-built third-gen RX-7 with a decent driver. And it took me around a couple corners. And the acceleration and the cornering, and he actually, before drifting, or I knew what drifting was, he split a couple corners. And, I was literally sold on that car right then and there.
Wow.
I started the plan in my head before I got out of that car how I was going to build a RX-7 for myself. And I don't know, what can I say? When the boost comes on a well-built rotary and it revs all the way to 10,000 RPM, it's an amazing feeling.
I can only imagine. I'm a big rotary fan, mainly because I have a probably a irrational fear of the magic spinning triangles. I don't know what it is, but it's something about something that doesn't look quite right about it that is very, very attractive to me.
Yeah, absolutely.
So here's a question about Mazdas in general. Mazda crowd, and especially the rotary crowd, are some of the most devout and evangelistic of many gearheads that I've ever come across. Is there any idea as to why that might be?
Well, I mean, I absolutely agree with you. I mean, the motor is what sucked me in. I mean, once you start to realize that it's the only car, in production that doesn't have a piston motor, and you start to realize some of the benefits of what it's capable of, 1.3 liter that when turbocharged can make anywhere from 300 to 500 to 900 to over 1,000 horsepower, depending on what kind of racing you're doing. And
Right.
I think that really sucks people in, the ability to work on something that's different. And people are still discovering and pushing new ways to kind of develop and push the rotary. I mean, I know with our drifting program at MazdaTrix and the motor development that I do, we're now building rotaries much more aggressively than we ever did in past years.
We're going to get into rotary things a little bit later. Let's talk about you and
All
drifting.
right.
What was the attraction? I mean, was it just the long smoky burnouts, going sideways, pitching it? I mean, or was it the car control and the feeling of being on the edge?
I think it definitely was a combination. I mean, the car control and being on the edge, I think, is a big aspect. I was always drawn to extreme sports. Did everything from surfing, skateboarding, motocross. I've broken my ankles multiple times doing awesomely fun stuff. But turned out racing's a lot safer. That's one of the reasons I went into that is it doesn't hurt so much. But sorry, what was the question?
I mean, the question was, what was it that about drifting that attracted you to it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, literally, the combination, I think, of the extreme sports kind of brought up in Southern California, and as well as, always going to the races with my dad, having a heavy automotive background. I always loved watching dirt track. And in Southern California, you had limited places where you could go watch dirt track and cars slide. But whenever I was given the opportunity, I loved midgets, sprint cars, late mod, rally racing was a huge influence. And I always found myself at IndyCar races, kart, stuff like that. And any chance I got to see an IndyCar slide a little bit or whatever type of car it was, that was like that gave me that feeling of excitement even as a spectator. And so
Right.
as soon as I got a car, and obviously the first time it rained, I tried to slide it, and I made a mess. I spun out, almost ran into some stuff, realized that I had no idea what I was doing and probably should go to a racetrack. But
Right.
that's a different story. And, I realized that it was going to be something that was going to be very hard to do. So there was a challenge aspect of it. I couldn't do it. And so that had me kind of challenged. And then the other end of it was I loved working with cars, building cars. And I figured it was a great way to kind of, start a project. I viewed it as, modern hot rodding. I grew up into V8s, and my first car was a 63 Studebaker. So, I mean, I was always into classics and, just tinkering with a car, for lack of a better word,
Right.
trying to find that next thing. And, with the combination of finding the rotary and the road racing with MazdaTrix on the side, and then the introduction of seeing people start to drift, I mean, it's just where I found myself. A lot of it also had to do with the financial aspect of racing. At the time,
Right.
drifting was really grassroots. There wasn't a professional level. And I figured if I was going to go get into something, it should be something I enjoyed, which was watching cars slide. And it was something I could afford to get into. I could go buy some radial tires, from the local junkyard, throw them on the back of my Mazda for, 25, 30 bucks, and go have a great day out at a drift day event.
Very awesome. Very,
Yeah.
very awesome. So let's talk about your current car. RX-8 13B. Thoughts about the car? Anything new for 2012?
Oh yeah, we're constantly developing it. It's actually stripped down and in pieces right now. I can let on to a couple little tidbits. Obviously,
Okay. Little top secret.
I like to keep it under wraps, but I've been leaking some stuff myself anyways onto Facebook and other areas, so I'll go ahead and
Okay.
fill some areas in. Obviously, with the weight to tire size rule in Formula B, it's critical to get the right match. So
Right.
we're trying to lighten the car up a little more. AIP has helped us a lot with carbon fiber components, and we're continuing to push that. They actually helped us put together a full wide body kit that we've actually had on our
Ooh.
Time-Attack Mazda Trix RX-8. But we've actually got a couple pictures up on my Kyle Mohan Racing Facebook site and on my blog, kylemohanracing.com/blog, of the body kit being installed. So we're going wide body next year. It'll be
Sweet.
fat, for lack of a better word. And
Nice.
we're also working on putting a quick change in the rear end. I think a key to current competition is being able to optimize the setup at every given track. And without pinpointing some teams, a lot of the top teams have these already and are utilizing it to just be able to get that launch off the line and great drivability through fast corners and slow corners. So with a rotary motor where you've got a power band that doesn't necessarily start down low, having the proper gearing is, in my opinion, key. So we've picked up a Winters quick change magnesium case, and they're currently fitting it into the Mazda RX-8 rear end.
Very nice. Now that is an interesting tool as it relates to drifting. Since other teams are using it and you're about to step into that realm, would you just say that it's just like having an extra, an extra tool in the toolbox that really allows you to fine tune the car for the track, and that way allows you to be way more competitive going into this year?
Absolutely, absolutely. It's all about, I get both sides of it. I own the car, I have to work on the car, and I drive the car. So my goal for myself is always to make the driver have to do as little work as possible. And so less times I have to shift, the more drivability I have in the car, the better my power band is, the less likely I am to make a mistake, and the more likely you are exactly to be able to utilize that tool, that rear end, that power. Tire sizing, weight to your advantage to be able to take a win and move on.
Interesting. Now, I'm assuming you're gonna have to do some R&D or just really just some testing with different setups to really find out, what's the most what might be your go-to if something doesn't feel quite right. But I mean, there's so many factors with a drift car that I mean, I guess you have a really good feel for certain things, but bringing this tool into your entire package, your formula, I wonder how many variables are you gonna allow yourself to have with just bringing this in? Like, are there just you have three different, go-to gear
No, well,
ratios, or is there like four, five, or 10? I mean, how
oh,
crazy can you really get?
you can get way too crazy. They're infinite. Actually, the quick change rear ends go in single gear increments, in both directions. So you can literally change one by one the gear tooth count to change the ratio. In
Wow.
comparison to last year, we already were utilizing three different Mazda factory rear ends. We had a 4-1, a 4-4, and a 4-7 with us at all times, ready to go. And then we also had a 5-12 in pieces, just in case we ever needed anything really close. So we've already kind of done a lot of the groundwork last year, and that's what led me to this decision, was having those adjustabilities was part of the equation last year to being able to be as competitive as we were, along with the help of Eibach's suspension setup, which we got one of their new R2 independently adjustable setups, and that was another big key to last year. But basically, what we're doing with the quick change is we're just going to fill in the gaps between these Mazda rear ends that we had. So
Okay.
You know, there definitely will be a learning curve, and I'm definitely going to spend a little time doing some math before the season starts on what I expect to be right. But I'm going to have options in either direction for all the different tracks. So there's a little bit of an investment that I have to make, but luckily it's a long-term investment. These products are built for racing and will last most likely longer than most of the body work on the car.
Well, you know, I think, you know, with this interesting bit, like I really hadn't considered that as a good solution to changing track conditions or changing it to the track itself. Like that's a pretty sweet tool, and I can only
yeah.
imagine that as you start to utilize it and you start to get a really good feel for it, I think you're going to find yourself doing way better as the year progresses. And I'm sure you have a lot of fans in the chat room that are going to be rooting for you. So I think everybody's excited, man. That's pretty awesome stuff, man. That's a really cool
yeah.
tool.
Yeah, excellent. I mean, that's one of the things we're definitely bringing out next year, along with a little bit lighter weight, the fatter body kit.
Mm-hmm.
And we got a few more tricks that we're tucking under our sleeve. We hope to still have a few more surprises before the season starts, that's for sure.
Okay. All right. Well, you hear from the man himself. Got something up his sleeve there. So when you see him out and about, ask him to see what he's got up his sleeve, see what he pulls out for you. So let's talk about rotaries and just the craziness. Okay. So one of the questions that I sent you was, what is a fully dressed 13B turbo weigh compared to like an inline 4, like a F20C, 4AGE, or like a V6, like a VQ? I mean, are we really talking like, because they look incredibly small, and there's
yeah.
not that many moving parts. So like, I mean, how much weight are we really talking about?
Well, it all depends on what products you start with. If you're just building the general turbo rotary, like you mentioned,
right.
It's a little over 100 pounds, around 100 pounds for the average motor, not
okay.
including the wiring harness and fuel system and that stuff. But
right.
you know, for a motor with maybe a manifold on it and a flywheel and you know, maybe a few basic components, in extreme situations, we've actually built full aluminum motors, and one person, an average person, can go ahead and grab that motor and lift it up and walk across the room with it. So at that point, we're getting down to in the under 100-pound, 70, 60, 80-pound range. I don't have any specific numbers in front of me, but I know the other mechanic literally grabbed it, picked it up, and walked it over to the scale. So it was obviously under 100 pounds. And then as far as the typical 13B goes, I mean, it's one of the few motors, and I mean, I've dealt with a lot of different motors, but it's one of the few motors that you don't need a cherry picker to lift it up and put it in someone's car or load it into the back of the truck. Two average people, one person grabs the front, one person grabs the back. You know, neither person's lifting more than 50 or 60 pounds, and you can just lift it right up and put it in a car. And you try to do that with any V8 or V6 or, you know, even an SR is pretty awkward if you go try to grab an average four-cylinder. You don't really
right.
want to do that.
Right.
In some cases, you know, we've had customers that have something to prove, and, you know, obviously we're talking about some big boys here. You know, some big racers. And they've literally come in and picked their motor up off the cart and went and put it in their own truck on their own to take it away. And, you know, we all
wow.
groan and go, oh, that dude's back, you know, he's going to hurt tomorrow. you know.
Wow.
At the same time, you know, two of us can lift one up. So, I mean, they're light. They're light motors, 1.3 liters. They're small. And the other thing that I think people really don't realize is there's no mass up top. They don't have heads. They're not a motor that's built off a block with a crank down low and heads and cams up top. Literally all of your mass is right in the center line of a rotary motor.
Right.
So even if you put a piston motor that weighed the exact same amount in the same car, its
mm-hmm.
center of gravity, its center weight balance would still be higher than what the rotary motor has. So in a lot of swap situations, people find that the cars actually handle better because the center of gravity and the weight balance for the car has actually been moved down.
Hmm. Interesting. Now, there's a few other rotaries that I've always been intrigued by. One of them is a three rotor. The other one's a four rotor. So the 20B and the 26B. So tell us about the 20B. I mean, I think it only came in like what, one car over in Japan.
Yeah, I mean, everybody loves the 20B. It was in the Cosmo over in Japan, which basically was the family sedan. You know, it's equivalent to Mazda's Skyline or Lexus's, you know, a sedan.
Right.
It's basically Mazda's version. It was a small twin turbo, three rotor setup, same size rotors as a 13B, same compression. A lot of the parts actually can be swapped back and forth between the 13Bs and the 20B3 rotors.
Right.
There's really only three or four components that are mandatory and unique to that motor. But unfortunately, that's what makes that motor so expensive.
Currently,
if you're to buy the eccentric shaft, the main shaft for the motor, it's called the eccentric shaft in a rotary, from Mazda, if you can even get one, which they're only available depending on who calls. I can't even get one most of the time.
Wow.
They're upwards of anywhere between $4,000 to $6,000 for a new one. Yeah, so, I mean, you know, you got some investment here. And then one of the other components that you can only use in a 20D that's mandatory for it is the center iron that holds the center bearing. Basically, it's the third bearing for the center of the motor. And, you know, Mazda, you know, they stopped making that car at this point 20 years ago. And that motor hasn't been in production since then. They didn't continue that. These small three pieces we're talking about, they just stopped making. So that center plate that is also unique to the 20B, you would guess it's also $5,000 to $6,000. So essentially, if you were to build a new 20B, you have two components that will set you back upwards of $10,000 to $12,000. So instantly, you know, you want to buy a used motor, so you pick up a used motor out of Japan. It's been sitting for 20 years next to the port in some Japanese garage. You get it, you take it apart, it's destroyed, so you need to rebuild it with all of your modern 13B components, which can be done except for these few parts. And then, you know, you end up with a fantastic modern motor. But, you know, it's a unique, fantastic motor that Mazda built. But it's just unfortunate that they haven't continued it in production, because that's in a lot of ways limited it. You know, if someone comes in and says they want to have us build a 20B, we'd be more than happy to. We've got two 20Bs on the ground in the shop, but you're looking at upwards of $20,000 for a decent build. And that's being, you know, modest. That's not doing what I would do to, the motor we built for Ron Bergenholtz, or the motor we've built for some other customers where they, you know, are truly built motors. But, moving on, you know, you mentioned the four rotor, the 26 those are really fantastic. Those actually never were even available to the public. Those from the factory, the Mazda 4 rotors were only built for the Le Mans cars and factory race teams, but they were pumping out 700-plus horsepower naturally aspirated with those things. Just the noise they would make, pure Formula 1 Mazda rotary, just glory. I mean, I truly, any chance I get to listen to one of those cars run, I go stand by it and just get happy.
You're not the only one. I think the first time I had actually heard it was an old video of this Scoot RX-7. You know, it's all in Japanese.
That's not even a real Mazda 4 rotor. That's one of the Japanese or Australian reproductions.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, all of these motors we see, these 4 rotors, they're reproductions. This is one of the rare areas where aftermarket people have kind of gotten involved with rotaries. There's a company in Australia and a company in New Zealand that manufacture 4 rotor kits. They're not to the same spec that the factory motors were built.
Okay.
So there's a lot of discrepancy between horsepower numbers and people, what they believe in him. So I won't go into details, but you know, Mad Mike runs one of them. He's doing well over 500 horsepower.
Right.
The EMI car has a variation of one of these aftermarket four rotors utilizing Mazda components. Same thing. I think they were over 500 horsepower. So, I mean, if you want a four rotor, there's ways to build them out there. And same as a 20B, you're looking at, you know, a $15,000 to $20,000 motor project. But in the end, you know, you're getting something that's it's a very unique race motor that not very many people have. The noise will rival a Formula One car or a lot of other just beautiful racing tones or absolutely screaming tones, depending on your opinion of it. But, you know, there's a lot of ways to do it. Actually, you know, again, bringing up Mazda Trix, they're actually working on a four-rotor motor. Mazda Trix actually wants to develop a U.S. Version of a independently manufactured four-rotor. So I know they're working on establishing the center bearings, the side plates. They're developing titanium rotors right now, which will be a first for the Mazda rotary field. So that's one of the reasons I'm really happy to be involved with them with their racing is they're a shop that's still out there pushing the limits of the rotary.
And that's it's fascinating because to me, you look at the eccentric shaft and it doesn't really look like much more complicated than say a camshaft. But we know all the engineering and metallurgy and everything that's required to go into it. But I mean, besides a handful of companies, how come the aftermarket hasn't really? I mean, besides the fact that maybe the rotary market is just very, very small, but how come the aftermarket it hasn't really truly embraced it? Like these big-name crank manufacturers, I mean, to me it seems like they would have the skills and the ability to really produce something like that. Why hasn't it really been put together?
They do. We've actually, you know, there's a couple companies out there. Guru out of Australia is one of them.
Okay.
And we deal with them. We're actually one of their distributors. They make 20B shafts. And some of the places here in the United States have actually produced 20B and 2060 shafts to individual customer specs, not even to the factory Mazda specs, to explore, again, you know, development of rotary. But what it ends up being is it's so time-consuming and costly that it really inhibits the development. Just to give you an example, some of the four-rotor stuff that Mazda Trix is working on developing right now, the shafts they're looking at have done for low-volume production runs, we're talking, you know, 10 or less, 20 or less, you're looking at $6,000 to $10,000 per eccentric shaft.
Woof.
And so it's just, it becomes a matter of volume because there's a limited amount of people that are willing to invest the money because they're still considered an oddball motor in a lot of people's eyes. I think, you know, people are hesitant to really put that development and investment in there. But there's still a lot of people out there that are pushing it. So.
Interesting. Yeah, I'm a big fan. So, like, you know, as far as I'm concerned, like, you know, you're preaching to the choir for me. But it's rare because, I mean, I've actually been dying to get somebody on who's familiar with rotaries to the extent that you are. And it's perfect that we got together to really talk about this. And I really want to have you on about drifting throughout the season. So we'll definitely cover that.
Yeah,
but
definitely.
Now that I got my teeth in, so now like I want to talk about rotaries pretty heavy here. So let's talk about rotaries just in general. What are they like? Boost, naturally aspirated, superchargers, nitrous. You know, can they handle all? I mean, any of those things? What don't they like? You know, what
yeah,
are they
absolutely.
Like?
Yeah. I mean, and that's, I think, what leads to a lot of the misconceptions about rotaries is people don't know what they like. They're not a piston motor. I mean, just right off the bat, if you try to tune a rotary the same way you tune a piston motor, there's a good chance you're going to blow it up. It's going to be too lean. You're going to put too much timing in it, and it's going to blow up. So that leads to a lot of what people think, you know, is the rotary not being reliable or, you know, people blame the apex seal. Oh, the apex seal broke. That's like saying my piston broke. You know, that's pretty rare. So you got to look at what the actual causes are. What caused that, you know, piston ring to fail? What caused that
right.
apex seal to fail in relation,
right.
you know? And what it really comes down to is a lack of knowledge of tuning because they are the oddball motor. You know, you
right.
can ask a tuner or a smog station or anybody, hey, work on my rotary, and they instantly give you a weird look, unless they love them.
right.
You know, so instantly you've got that aspect of it. But, you know, what they like is they like to be a little richer. You've got to be careful with your timing. If you detonate one, you will break an apex seal. They don't take
right.
detonation. But that's not the apex seal's fault. The apex seal is strong and can handle immense amounts of boost, RPM, and abuse.
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't like detonation. So people, I think, need to be aware of that. And, you know, any good tuner that's familiar with rotaries will most likely be wearing a knock headset and be very closely monitoring the motor. I have a personal tuner. I'll give him a quick reference right now, Nelson Savario.
Go for it.
I've been using him since I got into racing. You know, I would be hard-pressed to trust anybody else. He tunes
mm-hmm.
a lot of the Mazatrix motors, a lot of our customers, a lot of our non-customers. He does everything from Supras to Subarus to V8s, boats. I mean, he literally is one of those tuners that travels around the country and tunes stuff for people. But he's
right.
not a well-known one. But I think, you know, that's another key, is a rotary needs to be handled by someone who knows how to deal with its parameters. But, you know, going on to the motor itself, they like superchargers. They're just a really efficient air pump when you get down to it.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of being like a piston motor that's got a intake cycle and an exhaust cycle, the rotary motor is 100% duty cycle, which leads to a lot of the controversy.
Right. So break that down for us.
Yeah. Basically, while it's, you know, you got three sides of a rotor, basically inside of a peanut shell, if you
right.
can imagine, and it's spinning around in there in kind of a wonky oscillation.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is simultaneously, while one side of the rotor is pulling vacuum for the intake, it's sparking, creating the explosion on another face and blowing the hot exhaust out on another face. Now, there's a very careful timing to this procedure. Obviously, it's not all happening at the exact same moment. But there's never a cool-down cycle. That face of the rotor doesn't then go around and do an exhaust stroke instead of an intake stroke. It's
right.
basically running and sparking and exploding and sucking constantly, which leads to immense amounts of heat. Rotary motors make more heat than a V8. Those things just absolutely generate heat for their size, and that's another big enemy. But because of that 100% duty cycle, they love boost. They create a lot of exhaust flow, so if you're running a turbocharger, they're actually very efficient. And I mean that in horsepower to boost relation, not in fuel consumption.
Right.
They're very thirsty. Likewise with a supercharger. You can take and supercharge the modern RX-8 Renesis motor, and it will respond much like a piston motor, a 350Z. It creates a good bottom-end torque with strong mid power, but then it doesn't really deliver the punch up top that a turbocharger would. So with the development of the rotary, I think the supercharger, the turbo, have really become much more in their element. However, a naturally aspirated rotary is still a beast. You can spin a naturally aspirated rotor, a rotary that's properly built, upwards of 10, 11,000 RPM without problems,
mm-hmm.
which there's not a lot of motors out there that can handle that. And that's
nope.
one of the things that Mazatrix is developing the titanium lightweight rotors for. They're hoping to be able to spin this spin 13Bs to kind of the next level. They're trying to achieve maybe a 14 to 16,000 RPM rev line, which would then open up a whole new area for rotaries to actually run in.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's no valve train, we've always dealt with this mass of the rotor. Factory rotors are cast iron.
Right. Right.
And, you know, this would basically be like just now someone working on developing an aluminum piston. So, you know, we're really looking at drastically cutting down the rotating mass internally, which would really potentially help the rotary motor out. So, you know, as far as things they like, I mean, you can throw boost at them. You can throw, you know, a lot of boost at them. In my personal drift car, you know, obviously we maintenance this thing and we take very good care of it, but we're tipping in at boost at over 30 pounds, and
Whoa.
It stabilizes at 28 pounds. And with that kind of boost and a nitrous system that helps us pull the turbo down low,
right.
we actually are generating a consistent 500-plus horsepower from just over 4,000 RPM all the way to 9,000 RPM.
Whoa.
So, you know, but again, it really comes down to the tuning. I wouldn't be able to throw these kind of numbers at it without taking the time to test our setup, develop it, and have someone that I trust that won't just put this new setup on a dyno and accidentally blow it up.
Right.
I don't want that to happen.
No, absolutely not. And I think that's the biggest point you can make about rotaries is that you have to take really good care, and you can't
yeah.
just willy-nilly with, you know, because you have what you have two leading injectors. I'm sorry, two leading spark plugs,
two leading, two trailing.
You know, and I guess that requires some skill just in and of itself to make it work, right? I mean, you just can't.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, because you have a leading and trailing spark plug, you actually split the timing. There's two sparks happening every time there's an explosion. And a
right.
common thing a lot of tuners that aren't familiar with rotaries do is they lock the timing down, basically firing both spark plugs at the same time.
But you can't do that.
Well, I mean, you can, but it's kind of like the easy fix, the get around it. And, you know, you will make more horsepower, be more reliable, and have a better, cleaner burn with more safety and consistency if it's properly tuned with the right split, which
mm-hmm.
you know, can be anywhere from 4 to 10 degrees depending on what kind of motor and the application it's in. So, again, I think that comes a lot to do with having time involved.
Interesting. Because, yeah, one of the things that I always thought was fascinating about the rotary was just the way everything is sort of spaced out and, you know, naturally aspirated rotaries. With, you know, you get the, the compression relief and how people shape that. And then you get into porting, which is a whole nother conversation, which was described to me as that's sort of how you adjust, what did they say it was?
That would be basically your cam timing.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, you can't.
So yeah, peripheral port, bridge port, right?
Yep. And actually, I mean, at this point, those are great references as far as
right.
big changes. But I mean, there's
right.
infinite possibility in port shaping in between each one of those ports.
Really?
And, you know, at this point, that's what we actually have at Monzatrix is we've got a port design that's for drifting, a port design that's for road racing. And in some situations like SCCA racing where there's multiple different classes and different rules, we've got port designs for each individual class. And in
wow.
some situations, we won't just sell the porting work alone. We request that the person has us build a motor because at this point it is protected port work, you know. We've got a lot
well,
of time
yeah.
and money invested into that. But yeah, you can literally, it's this infinite range of basically a cam timing. You can overdo it, obviously. You can underdo it, depending if you're turbocharged. You obviously don't want too aggressive of porting. It can lead to overlap, which,
right.
You know, leads to problems. Same thing with back pressure issues. So there's
right.
a lot of exhaust moving in a rotary and a very distinctive pulse. So
right.
you need to utilize that, basically. If it's all done right, it can work in harmony, and it's an advantage. It's what makes the rotary sing. But
wrong,
I mean they can really do odd things.
Fascinating. Yeah, and you know, and that's the other thing about each of those different ports is they have their own sort of distinct sound to them, and it's very sexy. I don't know how else to describe it.
Oh yeah.
But you know, between the bridge port and the peripheral port,
rap. I mean, I could do it. You know, all of us rotary guys, we know how to make the bridge port sounds, and I think there's pictures of me on different websites making rotary noises. I think Larry Ten caught me one time. But I mean, each porting design has a very distinctive noise, which is the equivalent to basically like a heavily built piston motor rolling up and having a very distinctive lope to it,
or right.
Something like that. So the same thing happens in a rotary. Just it's all done via like a two-stroke, like a port timing.
Right. That's hot, dude.
So everybody always comes up to me and they're like, "Oh, what do you run in a bridge port, a P port?" You know, they got all these terms, and I'm like, "No, it's a street port." And they're like, "Why only a street port?" And well, it's a really big street port, I can assure everybody that. But we spent a lot of time developing it, and obviously because of the connection at MazdaTrix, you know, I see a lot of what other people are doing, and that leads me to make my decisions. And we were able to create the largest, strongest power band with the help of the turbocharger, with a street port. There's no need to go to these more aggressive designs that then even lose more response and power and torque down low. That's not what you want in drifting. That's not even what you really want in road racing.
Right.
You really want as much power as you can have all the time. And you know, that's become our goal, to keep up with the V8 craze. Is all right, how do we make a rotary run like a V8? And better than that, how do we make a rotary outperform a V8? And that's what we're actually building on now, in my opinion, is we're trying to create a power band that's longer than a V8. So watch out, V8 guys. I'm coming next year.
Why don't we just go ahead and jump into that? Because there were some other questions about rotaries that we'll just sort of jump into that later. But let's talk about the rotary V8 swapping, the V8 swap and drifting. Because the rotary, I think, for most people, they automatically give it sort of the underdog, because, you know, oh, it's 1.3 liters, oh, it's this, oh, it's that. And then there's all these myths and stereotypes that get lumped on top of it. And so, you know, they automatically give the rotary sort of an underdog statement. But I think there are very, very important points that I think the rotary might actually do better than the V8. But, you know, let's talk about V8 and drifting first. And the V8 invasion, and sort of what your opinions are on that, and then sort of talk about sort of the V8 in rotary, formerly rotary powered vehicles next.
Yeah, definitely. You want my opinion on the
V8 and drifting? Yes, V8 and the V8 invasion.
Well, I mean, I'll probably get yelled at tomorrow morning for this, but I actually think it's really cool. I love rotaries. I think everybody should drive a rotary. But, and Mazda should definitely put a rotary in every vehicle they make. It'd be awesome. I grew up in California. My dad was into race cars and hot rods. Like I kind of mentioned earlier, the first car I ever had was a 63 Studebaker with a 289 V8 in it. And, I mean, I worked on that thing and made all kinds of stupid mistakes playing with that. And, you know.
Right.
And so, I mean, I've always been into just the element of personal style and swapping stuff out. I mean, one of the reasons I got into rotaries was because it was different and people were swapping rotaries into other cars, you know, like old British cars and Volkswagens and who knows what, Volkswagen buses, you know. I saw all these crazy cars with rotaries, and it led me to, you know, kind of going, wow, you know, I want a hot rod rotary. That's going to be cool. You know, I've done hot rod V8. Let me play with a turbocharged hot rod rotary. So, I mean, I definitely don't hate the V8 at all. I think it's got its place in drifting. I applaud everybody who's running the SRs out there and rotaries and anything that's not a V8. I think, at the same time, you can't argue that it's a fantastic motor. I mean, I'm American. I mean, we gotta love V8. I mean, we make those. I mean, I got a V8 in my truck. I got a diesel with a V8 in it. I mean, I got a couple V8s. So, you know, I can't say too much about that. But at the same time, I like seeing people's individual style. I mean, I truly view this as a modern hot rod culture. I mean, people
Thank you.
swapping
Thank you.
motors, people turbocharging, you know, developing things that haven't been done before in racing
Right.
or even on the street. I mean, I just read someone's post the other day. They were getting all angry at someone who had a, you know, hella flush RX-7. And I mean, you can't expect, you know, everybody to want to race. You can't expect everybody to want to, you know, have an off-road truck. Everybody's got their style. So, I mean, I'm personally just excited that America is again embracing an automotive culture. And the fact that we're, you know, doing motor swaps, whether it's a rotary into something that had a piston motor or a piston motor into something in a rotary, I mean, you know, that's really what drew me into drifting. It was the fact that I could run whatever I wanted. It was the fact that I could try something new. And if I came
Right.
out with something different, people weren't going to laugh at me. They were going to come over and check it out and probably give me pointers on maybe how to make it better. Maybe I'd meet someone who was, you know, doing something similar. So, I mean, I personally, you know, I like to see individuality in cars. I don't want to
Right.
see everybody in a V8. I think that's a little overdone, you know.
Right,
But,
right.
you know, and people ask me all the time, they're like, oh, a V8's, you know, the easy way to go. I mean, look at Dye's car. He put a V8 in and he's winning. And it's not that easy. Come on, guys. Like, I mean, you know, give me a break. Every one of those top 16 drift cars out there is heavily built. It doesn't matter what kind of motor
Right.
it's running. It has
Right.
been built to do a job. It's not an LS1 off the shelf. It's not a crate motor. You know, I
Right.
mean, that'd be like people coming up to me and going, oh, you're running the stock Renesis motor still? No, I mean, you know, we're building race cars. These have developed well
Right.
past what the grassroots drifting, I think we ever expected. At least I ever
Right.
expected. But
Right,
again,
right.
I mean, this is what truly sold me on drifting and Time Attack was the whole throwback to, like, you know, and it wasn't even my era. I've only heard about it. But, like, Can-Am and old drag racing, like the import drag racing, people getting
Right.
to, you know, do something new, push the limits, and push the automotive industry. So, you know, I say, you know, bring it on. I want to see someone run, you know, someone bring out another V10 like Michael Essa. I mean, I was just looking at a boat online today that was a V16. Who's going to bring out a V16?
Well, you
Come
know,
on.
I mean,
Yeah, there's, hold on. I got one here. I mean, there's a guy in Florida that's, I think it's in Florida. I got to have to look at my notes. But there's a guy in Florida, somewhere on the East Coast that, has a boat motor that he's developed that's a rotary. And it's actually, I believe, I want to say it's either a 9-rotor or a 12-rotor. And it's basically
Interesting.
three rotors or 3-4-rotors stacked on each other. And he's claiming, you know, well over multiple, you know, like 1,200 horsepower or something. So, I mean, you know, there's creativity to be out there. And, I mean, you know, I think that's what's great about the current state of drifting. And, you know, in some cases where Time Attack's at is people get to be creative with their cars again. And I think that went away for a little while. All these series went to spec series. There was this whole spec craze, which I've personally never been sold on. I love watching them race. But
Right.
personally, if I'm going to invest into a car, part of it for me is building the car. And I like to have my own input in it. I don't really want to be told what to do.
Interesting. Interesting. Yeah, and that's a strong point. I mean, for a while there, I had concerns, and I was really kind of worried about our scene, about the sport compact scene and motorsports for those particular types of cars. And it just seemed like, you know, drag racing took a big hit, and you
Yeah,
know, time,
yeah.
you know, and Time Attack was on its rise. And you know, drag racing is a really great spectator sport, and I think, you know, there were some combinations of, you know, drag racing plus the nightlife plus car shows, and it just seemed like it sort of snowballed in this, you know, or feature creep, if you will. And then it just sort of went away. And but then
Yeah.
drifting came along right at the right time, and I really think it gave everybody an opportunity to see yet another spectator sport. And I think Ryan and Jim and everybody else who are from Madrid are doing a fantastic job making sure that Formula Drift doesn't go too far and overreach, and also doesn't restrain itself too much. And I think they're doing a fantastic job over there.
Oh yeah, I absolutely agree. Absolutely agree.
Have you ever been in a LS swapped RX?
Yeah, I've had the opportunity to drive a couple of V8 cars, a couple of RX-7s with V8s.
What did you
Never an
think?
RX-8 with a V8, but well, it's a whole different animal. I guess because I've driven so many rotaries, I'm so used to the power band being longer and having more time to shift and enjoy the moment. I
Oh,
seem to
yeah.
always find myself just running out of gear with a V8. But
Wow.
they're fun. They're fun. I can't say they're not fun. I mean, you definitely hop in one. You grab, don't even bother with first gear. Just start off in second, pop it in third, and go run the balcony or whatever your local drift track is. I think they're
Right.
fantastic cars for beginners. Whether it's a an SR chassis or an RX-7 chassis, I think the Corolla, the RX-7, and the 240 are really just fantastic beginner chassis because there's so many options out there. Whether you take
Right.
the stock components or an aftermarket setup or a V8, whatever, there's products out there. You can go buy them and you can go hit the drift track.
Fascinating. I'm gonna jump back a little bit on my questions here. What are some of the myths about rotaries that you might be able to dispel?
All right, my favorites here. Well,
Okay. Awesome.
the first one is definitely apex seals don't just break. They don't spontaneously combust. They don't fall apart. That only happens when your air fuel, your timing, something else changes. So, you can't blame the apex seal. I don't want to hear about it. And then, and there's some other definite myths out there. I mean, I hear a lot of people always, people are trying to run really high octanes with rotaries, so they instantly go to like a C16 or the common high octane fuels. But I gotta say, trust me, people. Like, everybody wants to argue this with me. I get argued with on a regular basis, but you can't run lead in a rotary. So any of these high octanes like C16 or any leaded race fuel is just destroying the inside of the rotary motor. Now, most people never make it that far because they probably blow up an apex seal because they were getting too aggressive with their tuning before they ever get to take it apart to find out it was going to die from lead poisoning anyways. But realistically, I have a couple cars, my RX-7 that I think everybody's pretty familiar with. The one that I ran in Time Attack, I ran it in Formula BE. We did the Red Bull World Championships with it. I've crashed that thing, overheated it like 5 times, driven it while everything's been wrong, knocked a wastegate hose off, went to 35 PSI, didn't know it. You name it, it's had it happen, and I've never broken an apex seal on that car. That motor's been together for 4 years. So people say that rotaries don't last. People say the apex seals fail, and people try to run lead in them, and these are the common problems and myths that lead to this common expectation that a rotary is not going to last. If you get a rotary tuned right and you got decent gauges just to keep an eye on it, then a rotary will last forever. You'll get bored of it. I think that's why they blow up. People get bored. It's been running for like 4 or 5 months with no problems, and they always hear rotaries have problems, so then they got to go mess with it. And that's where the problems start.
Interesting. So
But,
it's if you set it up right, you should be good, right?
yeah,
And
I
as long
mean,
as you get the data, you're good.
I took my car over to China, and I was running like 90 octane fuel in it. I just pulled some timing out, looked at the air fuel, ran a couple test laps, gave some data to my tuner, online. He checked it out, said you're good to go, and we went out and challenged Von Gittin with his whole team there. And
Wow.
it's a you gotta I
Wow.
gotta thank Haltech too. Haltech's a big part of my setup. All of these cars out here were all running standalone computers. And for the rotary industry, Haltech really has embraced the rotary.
Yes,
They
they have.
you can run everything with a Haltech. You can run a V8, a V10. You can probably run your helicopter with it. But they really have made rotaries part of their product line. So thereby, you're able to use all these rotary elements like splitting the timing, In my case, you know, being able to run staged boost down or staged nitrous down low to spool the turbo and still run something to 10,000 RPM or plus. You know, staging injectors. A lot of people don't even realize that rotaries, all rotaries have staged injectors. RX-8s actually have more than two stages. I think they're running a three-stage system.
Really?
But, yeah, all your rotaries out there have a primary and secondary, and they don't just come on as a batch. You know, they're coming on staged progressively. Secondaries usually come on somewhere between 3 and 5,000 RPM, depending on the car. So being able to tune all of these elements is part of debunking the rotary. Again, it goes back to just the lack of common knowledge. But, yeah, you know, myths. Yeah, apex seals don't fall apart, spontaneously combust, leave the motor randomly. That doesn't happen. You know, it's got to be a detonation or something. Something changed internally. And then also, you know, keep lead out of them and don't overheat them. If there's anything that's going to kill a rotary, it's overheating it. You need to keep the temperature below 235. 235, you start to damage stuff.
Interesting. Now, there was a question in the chat room here from Mr. Banner himself about oil metering. There's an oil metering pump. What is that? And is that a big thing?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad you brought it up. That's another. We can add that into the myth category. You have to have a metering pump. Rotaries are kind of like a two-stroke motorcycle or a two-stroke boat motor.
Right.
The metering pump is actually sucking oil from the oil pan and injecting it into the rotor housing or in earlier stuff, the carburation, and it's actually being burned in the combustion cycle like a two-stroke.
Okay.
And what it is rotaries run very dry, and if they don't have some type of additional lubrication in there, they will absolutely eat themselves up in under 10,000 miles. So
Interesting.
You have to have some type of lubrication there. And the metering pump on a factory car does that. A lot of aftermarket computers, again, a Hall Tech, you can increase the metering pump drive. So per se, if you're running more boost, more RPM, driving the car harder, you can run more metering oil. In a lot of cases, race cars, we just premix. In my car's case, I run about an ounce and a half of Idemitsu Racing Synthetic Premix. It's specifically designed for rotaries. In my fuel. And if I don't do that, I know from not personal experience, but from seeing customers make mistakes, that the motor will die very fast. And it has a very distinct look inside. It looks dry, black, and chewed up, like someone ran sand through it. But
interesting.
But, yeah, you have to have a metering pump, or you have to have some type of oil delivery system, premix, and this is one of the things that can lead to people thinking, you know, rotaries don't last because maybe one of their lines was clogged, they didn't change a line, they bought a car that didn't have the metering system working right, any of these possibilities. You know, so there's a lot of little things about rotaries that, yeah, I think that leads to why people become so attached to them, because if you don't know these things, you're probably going to hate the car. But once you get to know all these things, you're kind of an expert, so you might as well just marry the car and, you know, continue on, because it can be really fun. Trust me, they're fun cars once you figure them out. They really are.
I'm really not going to lie. I'm actually really a big fan of the FC. FD. Timeless. It's going to be sexy forever.
Absolutely.
But there's something about the FC. I don't know what it is about the FC, but it's something. Maybe it's like the older styling, the triangle windows. I don't know what it is, but there's something about it.
No, I absolutely agree. I just put together a personal street car. Maybe I'll bring it down to the Long Beach Grand Prix, but it's just an 89 convertible RX-7, a red, black interior, dropped it on some wheels, some XXRs and some Nexen tires. You know, I kind of had them lying around the shop.
Right.
And put the turbo motor in there, and, I mean, that thing is just a blast to drive. I'm really happy with it. But, yeah, the second gens are just timeless.
Yeah. I'm actually, I don't know what it is, but I'm actually, I'm a big fan for, of the Lotus Caterham, Lotus 7. And, you know, it's like a little two-frame chassis, super light, doesn't weigh much of anything. but I can only imagine what a really nice, well-built, naturally aspirated 13B would do in there. Or even better. I mean, we didn't even talk about this, but let's talk about carbs. I mean, this is one of the few engines that can actually do well with carburation. Have you tuned anything for carburation? I mean, what do you think?
Well, personally, I'm a turbo guy. I like turbos. my first rotary actually was naturally aspirated, and it had a Delordo side draft on it. So I got some carburation education right away.
Nice.
And you're absolutely right. I mean, a rotary, it doesn't matter if it's one of the brand new Renesis or twin turbo setups out of an FD3S, you can adapt them to carburation. And we work on a lot of, like you said, the Lotus Super 7s or the dune buggies, off-road vehicles. A lot of people put these motors in toys, and they just throw a carburetor on them, 48 IDA downdraft with like a decent 13B street port, and you're looking at 230 to 250 horsepower at the flywheel.
Get out of here.
No problem. And the other nice thing is when you're dealing with carburation and the carbureted rotaries really don't have a problem running, again, properly tuned. You really don't have a problem running them on a lower octane fuel like an 87 or an 89.
Right.
You know, when it comes down to tuning a carbureted rotary on the dyno, without the boost behind it, the gains that we've seen from adding octane and then cranking up timing really aren't that substantial. We're talking a horsepower or two. So
really?
If you're in a racing series, you obviously want to extract every little bit that you can. So then you have a reason to run the higher octane and dyno to it and you know, stay consistent with it. But in people's toys, when you know, we're putting together an early, you know, RX3, you know, track car or a Super 7 or a dune buggy, I mean, we tune these things and set them up carbureted so they can, you know, rev to about 8,700, 8,800, just shy of 9 grand, and they run on 87 octane. And, you know, a decent setup should get you about 200 and change at the flywheel. And personally, that's enough for any of these small cars to, you know, the dune buggies, top wheelies, and the Lotus Super 7s do burnouts in third gear. So,
man, and this is true. Because one of our guests, maybe two episodes ago, Todd Reed has a Super 7 Classic with like it's only like a 1.6 liter. He's like, it only makes like 160 horsepower, but this thing will, you know, run down Porsches on straights, no problem. You know.
Yep.
So I don't know. I guess if I ever pull the trigger and I get a rotary, I'll make sure I call you and say, hey, this is what I bought. I'm a little nervous. I'm walking through it.
No problem. I absolutely would be happy to help you out. And just like anybody, I mean, that's what I do at Mazda Tricks, is I try to help people figure out what they're doing with their cars. And, you know, people get me on the phone. I do engine work, porting, polishing. You can request me at Mazda Tricks. There's another head mechanic there. He's actually been doing it longer. So if you get him, don't worry. It's going to be fantastic. But if you want me to, you know, do porting or anything, just call up Mazda Tricks and, you know, we'll take care of you. That's what we do.
Awesome. It's funny because I ran into a guy who had a older RX, like a first gen, and he was doing the seafoam thing. Is that just like something that people are doing, or is it just something that he read up a forum? I mean, he was like pouring seafoam into his gas thing. He's like, yep, I do this like every, I don't know, 6 months, and, you know, I got 150,000 miles on this thing, and I'm going drifting next weekend, and I'm like, all right.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's a lot of things out there on the forums. And I'll be honest, we can't try every single one of them. So there's some stuff we just don't know about. I've had a lot of customers say that they use seafoam and do that stuff, but as far as at our shop, we never practice it. It's not something we do. But I know people do it, and I mean, I always tell people, if it's working for you, keep doing it. I mean, I've had customers come in, and I tell them absolutely positively their car is going to blow up the next time they go to the track, and then they come back and laugh at me. And you know, there's those rare cases where people stumble onto lucky setups, or you know, maybe it's not the C phone, maybe that motor is just a good motor and it's been well kept, and the person changed the oil, whoever the previous owner was.
Right.
We have customers that have, you know, it's funny, you can look at the customer and kind of tell how long the motor's going to last, but we have customers that bring rotaries in that have 200,000 miles on them. And they've
really?
Still got perfectly fine compression and are running, and the oil pressure is great, and we take them apart, and it looks like the person, it looks like a motor should. It looks well kept. We can reuse parts, and we rebuild them a motor. And we got other people that seem to be able to wear out a motor in 60,000 miles. And, you know, you always can look in there, you know, anybody who deals enough with taking apart motors, you know, as soon as you crack a motor open, you can tell if it's ever been hot. It's
right.
Felt burnt. And, you know, the first thing we notice is the motors that seem to have been running hotter don't last as long.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think, you know, people will find whatever they can that, you know, maybe their recommended idea or whatever it may be. But I think it really comes back to good maintenance. If the person's changing their
right.
oil, not overheating
right.
the car, and,
right.
you know, you can abuse a rotary. I mean, you want to talk about abuse. I try to kill my car every time I take it on the track. I have absolutely no restraint. I mean, I am the worst. And, I mean, on the rev limiter, on the boost, everything. But, you know, that's not what's going to wear it out. It's going to be running it outside of a parameter, not having the metering pump working, you know, having it too lean, too hot, not enough oil
right.
pressure, or even in situations too much of something. But, you know, I'd say that, you know, again, I think it's more or less maintenance. It's not the seat
right.
room. It's having a good owner behind the car or someone who,
okay.
who cares about their car. You know, and
okay.
that's
okay.
I think I just may have said the key is, you know, the person who's putting the seat foam in is probably someone who cares about their car, because it's something you can do as maintenance or you know, a carbon breakdown. So, I mean, again, you're looking at someone who's probably more or less spending more time tinkering with their car and trying to make it good than the other person is. So.
Oh, yeah. And he was. And I talked to him for about five
yeah.
minutes. And you know, he seemed like a young kid. And he was, you know, just, he's like, you know, I love this thing. You know, I wouldn't change it for the world. And we have a question here, another question from Justin Banner here. Should, I guess, Cali folks, should they push for longer oil changes that have, let's see, should Cali's push for longer oil changes have rotary heads worried? Okay, so California's pushing for longer oil changes. Should rotary folks be concerned?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, a lot of what the general automotive business does isn't necessarily good for your car.
Okay. okay.
You don't want to extend oil changes. I mean, there's a reason you're changing your oil. You know, in a rotary, it's not really recommended to run synthetic unless it's designed for a rotary, and that comes back to the metering pump. You can't burn synthetic oil unless it's been designed to
really?
Be burned.
Fascinating.
Yeah, so with a rotary, you're burning that oil, so you don't want to necessarily burn dirtier oil by leaving it longer. And another issue with rotaries is you're consuming oil, and it needs to be monitored. If it's not regularly checked or monitored, you could actually run out of oil. It will use it all up. And, you know, you may get a buzzer or something, but, you know, I hope you notice that. So, you know, you definitely don't want to skimp on oil changes, especially when it comes to a rotary. And, you know, I think a lot of that type of stuff, you know, modern cars having lighter viscosity oils and things like longer durations between oil changes is really related to the environment, which is a good thing. We all have to do what we can to protect the environment. I mean,
right.
we need to recycle. We need to, you know, my street cars have catalytic converters. You know, I like to go racing, but, you know, we need to do what we can to save the environment. But at the same time, you know, we have to not just accuse the automotive, the car, as being the biggest culprit. I mean, it's a well-known fact that, you know, cows pollute way more. Our beef production pollutes way more than automotives do in the United States. So,
Right.
I mean, you know, I think, you know, what they're doing there is they're trying to create less waste, which is a problem. But,
Right.
you know, like our facility, we've actually got teamed up with an environmentally friendly company, and they actually buy our used oil, and they're actually taking it and recycling it. So,
nice.
I mean, I
Okay.
think there's, you know, it's unfortunately, it's that kind of too little too late. They're trying to probably, you know, stop so much oil production and consumption.
Right.
But, you know, maybe that's not the right way to go about it. I actually hadn't heard about that. So that was kind of news to me. Thank you for bringing that up.
Well, maybe rotaries will get a pass. I mean, because it's a part of their function. Maybe they'll get a pass. I mean,
yeah,
maybe then
yeah,
again, I guess I can't expect, you know, CARB to actually think a little bit logically about things.
Yeah,
But
and I mean, you know, and it's, you know, not to veer off topic, but then you've got other manufacturers. Like, I mean, I definitely stand to be corrected on this, but isn't it Mercedes that has very long durations between their oil changes? Like, you can't, some of their cars, you don't change the oil, you just take it in for service.
That is actually very interesting. I believe I've heard something to that effect.
Yeah,
But
I don't work on Mercedes, but I know I've heard something like that. So, I mean,
hmm.
you know, there's definitely different opinions out there. But rotaries, you know, unfortunately, they do consume oil, and it does need to be changed. So I don't know what will become of that, but it could be an issue.
Well, according to Mr. Banner here, it says BMW, Mercedes-Benz, VW, yes. Which is interesting. I mean, like my car, for example, it's an 08 Honda Fit. It just tells me percentage of time till it needs an oil change. I don't know how.
Yeah,
I'm really not keeping track of how many miles. I mean, it could be 3,000, it could be 6,000,
yeah.
depending upon, according to the manual, depending upon how the car is driven and all these other parameters. It'll say, yeah,
absolutely.
You need an oil change. So, I mean, that's not really up to me. So maybe it's a function of they're telling companies that as program in something like that into the ECU, like, you know, push
yeah,
it out
I mean,
further.
Yeah, so that'd be a perfectly easy thing to do. I mean, Mazda could easily, you know, adapt a system that basically just says, hey, you know, it's time now. Instead of having a low oil light or whatever it may be, it'd just be a time
right.
for oil change light.
Right,
but,
right.
You know, you got to still look at the consumer and make sure they come in. Yeah, we honestly, I mean, I hate to bring it up, but we just had a customer run his car out of oil. You know, we didn't build the motor. He's a new customer, but, you know, he called up and he says, hey, I want to bring my car in for an oil change. And we go, okay. And he never showed up that day. And it turned out it ran out of oil on the freeway on the way to the shop.
Oh.
You know,
oh.
So, I mean, you definitely don't want to skimp. You know, I think that he even told us, he goes, yeah, the low oil light had been on for a while, but I didn't think about it. I'm just going, oh, man, you know, the car was telling you. So, you know, you always
yeah.
have to look at the consumer, you know. Just because oil
yeah.
changes become longer duration or there's lights there, it doesn't necessarily mean that's how it's going to work out.
Interesting. Well, we have a few more questions here, and then we'll wrap this bad boy up here. Let's talk about road racing. Let's talk about other motorsports. Are we going to see you anywhere else this year instead of drifting?
I sure hope so. I love racing. I mean, I'll absolutely get behind the wheel of anything. And, you know, I've had some opportunity to do some go-kart racing with the Gators Cup a year
okay.
or two ago. And, you know, so I love go-karting. I've had some opportunities to potentially take some seat time and some off-road stuff, and I'd love to explore that more. But
cool.
I think one of the funnest things I did was a Redline Time Attack 2 years ago with my RX-7. I mean, outside of drifting, which I absolutely love and is my passion,
mm-hmm.
Time Attack was a blast. It's still
right.
kind of encapsulated that, you know, run what you brung. You know, in my case, I didn't have the best, you know, some of the best components on my car, but what I did have
mm-hmm.
was a lot of boost. So anytime I needed to go faster, I just turned up the boost. And
nice.
That actually worked out to be a pretty good theory because in the end, we beat Conrad Grunewald's Camaro and we took first place in the Drift Class Championship in Redline Time Attack.
Nice.
And I actually wanted to continue to run that class and was in the process of building an RX-8. But unfortunately, the class kind of dissolved. you know, Redline had some issues this year, and you know, we'll see what happens this upcoming year. I'm very interested in the Moto IQ tuning. Sorry, how is it? It's the Tuner Pacific
Championships? It's the Moto IQ Pacific Tuner Car Championships.
There we go. Yeah, I mean, I would love. I've got this extra RX-8 chassis, and you know, it's just kind of my backup drift cards, holding
right.
spare cards. We're doing some development with it. But you know, given the opportunity, you know, I'd love to take it out there and run a Moto IQ round, especially if my boss from Mazda Trix takes his turbocharged RX-8 widebody out there. I mean, it'd be a blast. So you know, we'll see what happens. We'll see if I you know, if I've got some time and you know, if he's going out there and you know, doesn't conflict with Formula D, I definitely could make my way out to some fun events this year.
Awesome. I'm sure everybody's going to be rooting for you. Here's a quick question, and it's a very interesting question. Do rotary guys send their oil out to analysis, or is that just only the race guys do, or does anybody really do that?
I haven't personally done it. I would only do it if I had something that I couldn't figure out, like some weird element in there that I was unsure what it was.
Right.
But I've had friends do it, and it's actually very interesting to see what comes back. Actually, a common problem question that we get from people who are new to rotaries, especially when they just start racing, is they do an oil change, and their oil smells like fuel.
Okay.
And all I can say is, you know, rotary motors don't have excessive blow-by, at least they shouldn't, but for whatever reason, under high boost conditions, and especially when you're dealing with thinner fuels like the alcohols and methanols, they actually can get into the oil and dilute it faster than the typical piston motor. So, you know, we get customers that, you know, call us all the time and they go, "My oil smells like fuel, what should I do?" And we tell them, stop sniffing your oil. It's okay. You don't need to sniff your oil anymore.
Interesting.
Yeah,
you know,
I'm thinking
right now, because you're such a knowledgeable guy when it comes to rotaries, we may have to have you back on the show just to talk about rotaries.
I would love to. I mean, I'm so happy to be on the show. And, I mean, any time that I get to, you know, talk about this kind of stuff, I mean, I'd be happy to do anything with you guys.
Bam, we're going to do it. So let's pay some bills, man. Let's talk about the, I don't know if you saw this in the chat room, but, somebody said, don't sniff the oil. That needs to be on a t-shirt. So don't sniff
the oil. I might have to do that. You know, we're working on some new t-shirts for the upcoming year, and, that would be a fantastic one. You know, don't sniff the oil. It's okay. It's going to be all right.
Awesome. And we'll just put like a big, nice rotor on there. It says, don't sniff the oil.
Love it. I like that. Yeah, that's good. Whoever came up with that,
hey, man,
yeah, come
you
find
said it. If I
make you, you get a free shirt, you know.
You said it, man. Okay, awesome. You said it, right? All right.
That's right.
Yeah, okay, we're going to make this happen. But let's pay some bills, man. Any people, partners, sponsors you want to shout out as we close out here today?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, Nexen Tires, Mazda Trix, I mean, couldn't happen without them. And then, I mean, you know, Exidy Racing Clutch, they absolutely love our program. And, I mean, we're so thankful for what they've done for us. I mean, we love their double disc carbon clutches. And, I mean, I don't even know how we'd run without them. I murder clutches, and their double disc carbons take it without a problem. And, you know, we got Haltech and Mothers, Mishimoto, and Drop Engineering, which are two great companies that are newer companies. You know, I just got my Christmas delivery from Mishimoto. You know, obviously, we're rebuilding the car, so they set me up with their newest stuff. They just dropped me a whole new fan shroud fan. It's like 16-inch puller, brand new double-pass radiator. And, I mean, it looks beautiful. Their quality's really been just improving. You know, we got Eibach last year. They set us up with a double adjustable suspension. Loving it. You know, VLEDs was making a flash. You know, and Reggie would kill me. You know, Turbonetics.
Yeah.
They've seriously been one of my longest running sponsors.
When
I didn't have any sponsors, when I had like Mazda Trix and my parents, you know, I got somehow, I was at a car show and I met Reggie Wynn thanks to another friend. And he looked at me, and he was, we talked rotaries for a minute, and he said, "Hey, give me your information. We'll talk business." And a couple months later, they were setting me up with a custom turbo for my RX-7. And after a couple seasons, they've just been killing it on development. We're running their GTK right now, and we're literally doing over 600 horsepower at the flywheel. And
Ooh, nice.
That's up there on a 13B. So Turbonetic,
oh, yeah.
big thanks. And, I got lots of small people, my homies, Kenny, Royce, Justin. He hasn't been part of the team lately, but he's a homie.
Right.
I got a good buddy, Smokey and Calvin, Rudy, my PR guy. He's the one who makes me sound good when, I'm not personally being interviewed. Efren at Shift Group. All these people, they make it happen. XXR Wheels. I hope I'm
right.
not leaving anybody out because, I'll be hearing about it tomorrow for sure. But literally, I am so just an automotive gearhead. People always ask me, how'd you get your break? It's like, it wasn't a break. I've just been, devoted. I just wanted to be involved. And, all of these companies, they're out there. People ask
right,
me
right.
how to get into it, and I tell them, just go out there, get involved. It doesn't matter if you're at a show, if you're at a track event, but get out there and start introducing yourself, meeting some people, Oh, one more. WPC treatment. They handle all my motor pieces, give it a little treatment, a little shine up. Fantastic.
Right, right, right. Now, how does we're going to have to get into that, because the next time we talk, I want to go deeper into rotaries and, WPC treatments, 85, all these other things, I think, are really important questions because, piston motors, everything else is a piston motor. Rotaries they're special. They are
yep.
magic spinning triangles. They're mesmerizing. They're beautiful, and they make awesome noises. Kyle, I gotta say, man, it's been an honor and a pleasure, and I think this the chat room is on fire. I think everybody was pretty excited to hear you were going to be on the show. You're very, very much for coming on the show, and we'll definitely have you back on again in the future.
Oh, thank you guys so much, and I'm happy to be on anytime. You want to catch up and talk rotaries, I'd be more than happy to, even if it's not on the show. We can just talk rotaries if you want. But stoked and looking forward to the upcoming season. We're planning on bringing our Mazda RX-8 back, super fierce, Mazda speed, and all of our connections to deal with the Mazda are coming in strong, and we plan on definitely turning it up for next year. I think most people think we might have that rotary at the limit, but it's not at the limit. We got more.
Well, everybody get out there, support the young boss. He's making it happen, especially the rotary crowd. Go out there, support the young guy, and I'm gonna try and see you at least one or two events this year. I'm gonna try and make my way to Road Atlanta and New Jersey, so I'll definitely see you there. And we'll do a quick 5 minutes with the recorder, and we'll put together a show real quick. But I appreciate you coming on the show, man. It's been tons of fun. I think everybody's pretty excited about it, and hopefully next time we'll get more rotary heads in the chat room, because it's going to be rotary specific.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. Thanks again. Thanks to my family. Thank you. Thank Moto IQ. Thanks for having me on. Totally happy.
Hey man, no
come
problem.
And, come and check out my Facebook. I've got a Kyle Bohan Racing Facebook.
Out.
What was
that? So go ahead and give out all the information, all the contact info. And by the way, one of the people in the chat room says you haven't tweeted since December 4th. So we got to get you tweeting a little bit more.
Yeah, my bad. You're right. Absolutely called me out on it. In fact, that's kind of one of my New Year's resolutions. I've just started putting some new blog posts up.
Okay.
I have a weird habit of I like to keep my development a secret. So, I tend to not post what I'm doing, and I post what
mm-hmm.
I'm racing. So I'm trying to change that. We're actually going to start to do some video blogging of the car reassembly. Make
awesome.
Sure to check our Facebook page, Kyle Mohan Racing.
Mm-hmm.
Check my blog, kylemohanracing.com/blog. And also, yes, I'll make sure to start putting it on Twitter too. And, I'm Kyle Mohan. I'm going to try to ramp up my social networking. We're going to try to do a little more posting here.
All right.
Not just,
well, if you go, I was going to say,
Okay,
if you go
most of
an
the
episode
time
or
I
two
just lock
back.
myself in the garage.
Well, I mean, you do sort of do the car, and you wear so many hats. I mean, I guess people will understand. But if you go back an episode or two, big shout outs to Chris Rhodes, Studio Rhode. He's done two episodes so far on personal branding and sort of social media. Amanda Marr is social media conversation. So if you go back an episode or two, you might be able to check that out. Yes,
Nice,
social
I will.
media. Yeah, definitely go check that out. Amanda Martin, aka Drifter Mama. Definitely go check it out. And David Carey says, "Do you remember the Circuit City Miata?"
Oh, yes, absolutely. I mean, how could I forget those cars? They were a blast to drive. They were a blast. I mean, Cosworth Power, we ran them up in Portland. I got to do some demos with them. They were a lot of fun. Oh, which one? Is he talking about the silver one? He's got to say either silver or red. Which one is he talking
Don't
about?
know. Let's see what he chimes in, see what he says.
Yeah, because there's two, and I remember them all. So.
Let's see. It had a Cosworth motor from an Atlantic car. It was the red one from Orange Show.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I remember that. Me and Casper Canuel, we drove that. Alex Pfeiffer had a turn in driving it. Hiromi's driven it. There's been quite a few Formula D drivers that have gotten the opportunity to drive that. And I mean, that I think kind of comes from Mazda. Mazda is a great supporter of grassroots racing. One of their slogans is, on any given day, there's more people racing Mazdas than any other car. And it's true. Even with our effort at a grassroots level, they were always, very interested in what we were doing. They tried to help us, promote our car and our team, and still to this day, whether it's their Facebook or their Mazda Speed page, they do a lot with all of their teams, and I think that's fantastic as a manufacturer to have so much dedication to racing.
100%, 100%. And hopefully, I will get a representative from Mazda on the show, because that is a strong statement that they do say, that on any given weekend, people race Mazda than any other car, which is strong and it's
It
true.
is, and I mean, they make it a point, and I believe it. I mean, I wish we had more Mazdas out drifting. I mean, the RX-8's a fantastic chassis. The FD is a fantastic chassis. The FC is a fantastic chassis. You got three fantastic Mazda chassis, and you got people like Jeff Abbott and the Circuit City Miatas. I mean, they're great chassis too. So, I'm looking. People. Come out with your rotaries. I mean, especially when we're out at the track with the Mazda trick set up. If you ever have questions or need some advice, I mean, we're there to help too. Come by. As long as we're not like frantically working on our drift car, we'd be happy to talk to you.
Well, I think I don't know, man. If I get the money, if I get the ability, I may pull the trigger on an FC, man. Those things are too sweet, man. Too
Oh,
sweet.
I'm counting on it now. I'm going to hold you to it. I mean, I'm going to start sending you. If any of my buddies come up with nice cars for sale, I'm going to send them your way.
Yeah, well, it's gonna take me a little bit to stack some chips, unless somebody says, "Yeah, I think we want to get this guy Will in a car, because he's got this excellent platform." He talks about. So Kyle, it's been fun. We're gonna book you again, and pop this episode up so that way you'll have something to post on your website.
Absolutely.
We'll definitely make it happen. Everybody, say happy birthday to Kyle. And everybody's happy birthday. Go check out the websites. Give us the Facebook and the Twitter.
Yeah, my Facebook is just Kyle Mohan Racing. Look for the Kyle Mohan Racing page. There's a personal page too, but I got a lot more action on the Kyle Mohan Racing page as far as the racing stuff goes. So if you don't want to know about when I go to the beach, then check out my Kyle Mohan Racing page. You can try both, but the racing's on the racing page. And then also we've got the Twitter. You can check it out. I'll try to update it more. And my personal blog and website, www.kylemohanracing. And then for the blog, it's just .com/blog. And you'll be there. So check it out. We've got lots of stuff. Oh, and we're a Destroyer. We're partnered with Destroyer. We're coming out with some new T-shirts and some stickers and
Oh
stuff. So
yeah,
keep an
my
eye
man
out for
John
it.
Chase. Yeah, John
Yeah.
Chase, cool dude. Big shout out to
Yeah.
John Chase over at Destroyer.
Yeah,
He
absolutely.
actually Yeah, he actually was one of the first people to actually sponsor all the listeners for the show. So if and it's still out there. So if you go to dstroyr.com, if you use the coupon WillsCast, all one word, you get 20% off your order. So
go check it out. Fantastic
definitely,
stuff. I love his clothes.
Yeah, me too. I got a shirt from my boy. He's actually outgrown it, so I need to get another Destroyer shirt for my son.
Fantastic.
You know. Oh yeah, man. And I have the Digicam Destroyer logo shirt that I wear frequently. But they call me again, so it's whatever. I gotta get some more gear. I gotta get me like a hat or something.
We're working on some custom stuff for next year. So like I said,
really?
You know, watch for the new Destroyer stuff we're working on. We've got our classic design, my KMR RX-8 kind of on the front. If you go to Destroyer's website, that's
nice.
Available right now. And we're working on some new stuff for next year as well. So keep an eye out for it. We should have it at Long Beach.
Most definitely. So everybody go do that. Kyle, for the 1,000th time, it's been fun, dude.
We're gonna have you on again, man.
This has been too much
fun. Absolutely. Anytime. Just hit me up. Thank you. Thank everyone, and have a good night.
All right. Thank you very much, everybody. This has been another episode of Motor IQ Radio. I almost said Will's CarCast. This has been another episode of Motor IQ Radio. I hope everybody had a good time. Go over to Facebook. Find Kyle Mohan's page. Find Kyle Mohan Racing. Let's boost his numbers over there a little bit. Don't forget to say happy birthday and much love and respect to everybody. Everybody that's in the chat room, David, Justin, Chris, Drifter Mama, Austin, Drew, big shout out to Ferrari 812, Scott who used to be here, Martin that was on the show earlier, Def Motion, everybody else that's been in the chat room, Mr. Time Attack, everybody. I really, really, really appreciate it. It means so much to me. Definitely go out there, spread the love. Let's make 2012 for Moto IQ Radio top notch. I'm going to bring the heat. Let me see who's coming up next week. I believe we have Alex from Dentsburg Garage. We're going to go deep. We're going to talk about Hill Climb. He's actually been feeding me lots of videos on Hill Climb. And by God, if I get a rotary, I'm going hill climbing. Anyway, so Alex will be on next week. We got a few guests coming on with him. We're going to talk about hill climb. The following week, we're going to have another tech section with Vibrant Performance and Ken Gucci. Just a heads up, Ken Gucci, January 25th, 10:30, he's going to be on the show. Vibrant Performance is going to be on the first hour. February 1st, we're going to have Rob Cardona. We're going to be talking to him about World Racing, World Electronics, Swing 2.0, all that craziness. February 8th, we're going to have Scott Vanderhyde from Fontana Nissan and Nissan Race Shop. And the 15th, and this is very, very important, so make sure you guys hear me here. Local Motors, John Burton Rogers is going to be on the show. So everybody, check out local-motors.com. There's some cool stuff there. You're going to geek out on it. It's going to be great. It's going to be great. And then the 22nd, we're going to have Jeff Abbott on the show. So let's wrap it up. Big shout-outs to everybody. Yes, Drifter Mama, we got to get FRN, femaleracingnews.com, on the show. We're going to try and do like a two for Michelle Abadi, Carrie Ann, De La Cruz on the show, second hour or second half hour, whatever. We're going to make it happen. Everybody, if you have shops that you want to get on the show, send them an email. Tell them to come check out the show, motoiq.com/features/motoiq_radio/ASX. Send them a link. Tell them to go check them out. Tell them you want to hear them on the show. Big shout-outs to everybody. Much love and respect. You guys have a good evening. Peace.